News Talk Tonight continues on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Richard Krause, in for Jim Richards. We have the rundown happening right now. So lots going on here with the rundown. We're going to have a look at the biggest stories of the day and of the week in some cases, and just get a couple of fresh opinions on them from people who are way smarter than me. And that is Dan Laxer, writer and co-host of the trivia show from 9 a.m. to noon on CJAD, and Andrew Pinsent, host of CFRA Live from 6 to 11 a.m. on weekends. And when I first read that, I thought it said 6 a.m. to 11 p.m., Andrew, and I thought, wow, that's an even longer shift than last time we spoke.
You do, in perspective, you do make it sound shorter, so that's nice.
That's right. Makes you feel good about that. I'm glad. I'm glad to have helped send you into the weekend feeling good about it. So, Buffy St. Marie, we've been hearing about this for the last couple of days. The CBC says legendary musician and activist Buffy St. Marie's birth certificate, other documents and details from family members contradict her claim that she is indigenous. Dan, I'll start with you. Buffy St. Marie is retired. She's 82 years old. Do we need this story, or is it an important story to tell?
That is the first question that popped into my mind. Mm-hmm. Is this coming from CBC, or are they using that documentary about her as a jumping off point? Either way, shame on the CBC. Look, this is Buffy St. Marie. She's not Grey Owl. She's got a 6-decade career behind her. Did somebody say, hey, let's try and find out if she's really indigenous? And say, hey, she doesn't quite look indigenous to me. I don't know. But what is the point? I mean, I'm an Ashkenazi Jew, which means that according to some, I'm actually the descendant of a Turkish tribe that converted to Judaism thousands of years ago. Am I suddenly not Jewish? I mean, why are we? I don't even know why this is a thing.
And Andrew, she has done so much for indigenous causes, for awareness of indigenous issues. It just seems to me to be a lot that I don't think anyone was asking for.
Well, I think it is a very uncomfortable story. And, you know, Buffy St. Marie has had, I think we've seen this with a couple of academics in Canada as well, kind of different issues. But, you know, I think because of all those accomplishments and because of, you know, the notoriety of what she's accomplished, I think it is important to take a look at this because, you know, it's almost like stolen valor in some senses, right? If you're an indigenous person, she's one of the first women to win an Oscar, right, as an indigenous. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a very storied career, but I think there is kind of questions based on some of the reporting there. She's kind of identified as three different things over the course of her life. I think there's still more questions, but I almost get a sense from her reaction that it's genuine as well. So I don't know. I hope it gets sorted out and there's a happy ending to this story, but I don't see it.
I don't see it either. I don't see a happy ending. Once something like this is out in the world, once the cork is out of the bottle, so to speak, it's pretty hard to put that back in.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's a shame.
Mm-hmm. Trudeau has made a major carbon price policy change. The Canadian government is doubling the pollution price rebate, the rural top-up rate, and implementing a 3-year pause to the federal carbon price on deliveries of heating oil in all jurisdictions where the federal fuel charge is in effect. It's a big shift, and it's a big shift in thinking and in policy. Dan, what kind of message do you think this sends?
Well, I have to be honest, all cards on the table. You introduced us being smarter than you. I was having trouble understanding this story because, you know, when it comes to and things like this, environmental rebates, et cetera, there always seem to me to be these backroom dealings. You know, this is good for the environment, nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Right.
So I don't understand whether the Trudeau government is making it easier for Atlantic Canadians to make the switch to more environmentally forms of energy, or if he's making it easier than to just stick with oil for a bit longer. You know, here in Montreal, over the past week, they've been talking about how over the next couple of decades, they're going to be eliminating natural gas in new dwellings over the 20 mm-hmm. years. next 20 years. And I'm not sure, you know, if we're not talking about big industry and the pollution they cause, producing the things that we enjoy in our day-to-day lives, what is limiting the ability of regular folk, regular Canadians, whether Atlantic or otherwise, to enjoy these things? I mean, if they're going to eliminate natural gas, does that mean we start buying charcoal for barbecues? Mm-hmm. You know, where is this from and where is it going?
And Andrew, my understanding of this is that that there's going to be no change. They're still going to allow the heating oil and all that sort of thing. It's just going to make it a little easier to afford all that stuff. And that's, there's a time limit on it. I mean, it starts now or in about 2 weeks from now, and I think it goes until March 31st of 2027. So it's not forever. But is this just a way of trying to bring back the Atlantic provinces, which are frequently liberal strongholds, but maybe seem to be drifting a little bit these days?
Well, I don't think it's super complicated in a sense of, in my opinion, I think the liberals are just seeing the conservatives rising in the polls, in some cases in double digits, on a message of affordability. And in terms of the levers that they can tap right now, this is one way where they can kind of tap into that and say, hey, we're looking out for you. We're trying to make your Canadian life more affordable. So I think this is in reaction to them just kind of getting pummeled in the polls, and it's something that they can control. Like you say, it's something that's temporary, so you're not committing to it. And the way that the carbon pricing and the fights that have gone on in the courts and the deals that have been made, I don't think the Liberal government is going to step away from its carbon pricing scheme anytime soon. I think this is a legacy thing for the Trudeau government. So I think we'll kind of see this kind of skirt away. Maybe when the economy gets better, we'll stop talking about it as much.
I think you're probably right about that. But I just wonder, why now? Why the Atlantic provinces only? Now listen, I'm from the Atlantic provinces. I'm all for anything that keeps a few extra dollars in people's pockets down there. But it just seems, I don't know, is fishy the right word?
That's a good pun for the Maritimes, for sure. But I think definitely some domestic politics at play. You've also got a PC government in Nova Scotia. Yeah. So anytime the PC government is coming to the table and saying, hey, this is good from the federal government, I think that's also good too. But they are pushing for more of a rollback as well. So it's not a complete victory, but I think it's just trying to keep everybody affordable. And the cost in the East Coast is also much higher to live.
Mm-hmm. So the Toronto Metropolitan University, formerly known as Ryerson, is undertaking a formal independent review to see if recent incidences have breached policies on non-academic conduct and freedom of speech in the wake of a letter signed by students demanding administration recognize Palestinian, quote, resistance as fundamentally just. There was a letter. It sparked a backlash with online threats to report the students, many of whom signed with their names, some anonymously, to the Law Society of Ontario and to future law firm employers. First of all, how do we feel about that, sending the names of the people that would have signed this letter to potential employers to make sure, I guess, that these people would never be employed? Dan, no matter what the situation is, really, I don't think that that's right.
That's a difficult question, because at some point after a student graduates university and they go out into the real world, they may look back on their time in the academy and rethink the position they held as a young student, as a young left-leaning student.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said there, but you also have to have the faith that when they do apply for a job, who knows, maybe a potential employer will give them a chance to redeem themselves if they find that, you know, when you were a student, you had particularly reprehensible views. Do you still feel this way?
And it's the kind of thing, we're almost out of time here, but it's the kind of thing too, I think, you know, social media is out there, and I'm kind of not exactly equating the two, but once something's out there, it's out there kind of forever for future employers to have a look at. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's right to report it necessarily, but I don't think you're going to be able to hide from it somehow. Listen, we're doing the rundown right now with Dan Laxer, writer, co-host of the Trivia Show at 9 a.m. to noon on CJAD in Montreal, and Andrew Pinson, host of CFRA Live, 6 to 11 a.m. In Ottawa. When we come back, there's more of both of them and a little bit more of me. I'm Richard Krause, and for Jim Richards.
Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Richard Krause in for Jim Richards. And we're in the middle of the rundown. That's where we bring in clever people to say clever things about some of the big stories of the week. Joining me is Dan Laxer, writer and co-host of the Trivia Show from 9 a.m. to noon on CJAD in Montreal. Do you ever go to the Burgundy Lion, Dan, in Montreal?
Oh. I haven't been to the Burgundy Lion in quite some time. I used to go there a lot to see swing bands and stuff like that. Yeah,
it is a fantastic pub. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's a fantastic pub. I go to Montreal for a week in July every year, and I discovered it a while ago, and it's always our first stop before we branch out into the rest of the city. Also, joining
me, it's a great room for live shows.
Yeah, and just, you know, great people, and yeah, fantastic place. Also, Andrew Pinsent is here, host of CFRA Live 6 to 11 a.m. on the weekends in Ottawa. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So this is a Toronto story, but let's broaden it out a little bit. Doug Ford's government is open to taking over the Gardner and the DVP to help fix Toronto's finances. That's what sources are saying. So these things are a money suck on the city here, costing us millions of dollars every year. It would be really great if somebody else would pick up the tab for this kind of thing. Do you think that this is a little present to the people of Toronto, a little peace offering to the people of Toronto because of some of the strange goings-ons that have been happening and so much bad press that the Ford government has been receiving lately, that they're trying to make us forget about things by offering money for problems that are longstanding in this city. Dan?
Well, that's the impression we're getting. And the thing is, though, that clearly from what I'm reading, Torontonians don't trust that Ford will necessarily make the best decisions, you know, for the city and specifically for the two highways, based on the past experience that you're alluding to. So he's going to have to, you know, pull his pants up and pull his socks up, rather, and prove himself to them.
Pulling the pants up, I think, sends a different kind of image that we don't want to send.
Yeah.
The socks. Andrew, how long do you think, if the province takes over the DVP and the Gardner, how long do you think it'll be before tolls come in?
Well, I was going to say, start with highways and then let's go with, social housing. Let's give it all back to the province because, right, they downloaded this onto the municipality back in the late 90s. So I do kind of find it somewhat ironic that they're saying, hey, we'll take care of this for you after dumping it on you about 20 years ago. So I think the government seeing revenue and putting tolls on the highways could very well be something that you could see. But it definitely is, I think, more of a token right now in terms of political amicability when it comes to the province and dealing with the city of Toronto on a number of fronts.
Another story that caught our eye over here, and the headline says, "We have a system that has lost its integrity. Canada moves to reform its international student program. Starting on December 1st, Canadian colleges and universities that are enrolling international students will have to verify each applicant's acceptance letter directly with immigration officials before a study permit is issued." That comes in the wake of a fraud investigation this year that found education agents had provided some 300 international students from India with doctored admission letters to Canadian colleges. I think the issue, though, goes beyond these doctored admission letters. I think that once these international students are here with visions of you know, changing their lives, and things are going to be great when they get to Canada, and they come here. It's very expensive for them, and there's no place for them to live. You see ads on places in Toronto, and I'm sure it's all the same in Montreal and Ottawa and around the rest of the country as well. But here on BlogTO, you see these stories about student lodgings that are four cots shoved into a bathroom. Someone sleeps in the bathtub, and it's $500 a head per month, and there's just no place for them to live. So which is the bigger issue? I guess it's the, what do we do with these international students once they're here if we can't house them?
Well, I think we definitely need to be reviewing at least the tuition structure, right? Because, you know, they pay, the international students pay at least double the tuition cost just because they're an international student. So I don't know if they get some kind of special education that the same students in their class don't get domestically, but they're getting gouged. They're getting gouged, mm-hmm. and they become vulnerable to these kind of things, right? Because they're trying to save money and things like that. So I think the system is kind of circular and it all comes into one, but they definitely need some safeguards to make sure people aren't getting exploited. And I think one of the people doing the exploiting is our educational institution. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and well, and Dan, you're in Montreal. Is it still the case that they're going to double the tuition for students who don't speak French?
Well, what's happening now is most of the people that run the universities have spoken out against it, both the Francophone and Anglophone universities, and now the students have a walkout day plan. But the staffers and the professors are saying, well, we want to be able to take part as well. Aside from the Quebec government, aside from the Coalition Avenir de Québec, there doesn't seem to be anybody that is in favor of this move. And I don't know if the Legault government is going to yield to pressure and back down on this, or whether they're going to dig in their heels. But before we even get to that point, I think what the Canadian government is after is, before we even have to deal with international students and whatever problems they face once they do somehow get in here, is they want to stem that tide. And I mean, you know, Mark Miller has, you know, I don't know if we want to say he's simply paid lip service to it, or whether he is absolutely serious about making improvements to the immigration system. But if there is fraud taking place, it makes it that much more difficult for those students who have legitimate letters of, not letters of invitation, but these legitimate acceptances.
Yeah, admission letters, yeah.
Yeah. So if that's the case, then and if they can stem the tide of what is essentially fraud, then so much the better. Then once legitimate students get in here, then we can deal with those other issues.
I think wherever there is large amounts of money to be made, I think that it's going to be very difficult to squash that fraud completely. It just seems to me to be so widespread. And I bet you the 300 or so doctored administration or admission letters they found earlier this year is just the very tip of the iceberg.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Because like, we're talking about countries all over the world, right? Student visas and things like that. I'm sure it's just the tip.
There's another story here. Directives to military chaplains urge expunging God, religion from Remembrance Day and public ceremonies. So new directives from military chaplains tell them to be, quote, respectful of spiritual diversity during public addresses, to employ gender-based analysis and replace religious symbols like crosses and stars of David with a generic chaplain's crest. And that could spell the death of the role of chaplain in Canada's armed forces, says one long-serving veteran of the chaplaincy. You know, I guess, Dan, maybe the question is, in the new world, in today's world, is there still a place for the chaplain?
Well, it's, I'm of two minds on this story. Coming at it as an atheist, I don't see a place for God or religion anywhere. But that's going to offend just about everybody, because absolutely, you know, when we're talking about Remembrance Day, and even when we're talking about, you know, people who give their lives in today's day and age. Their families do find comfort in the chaplaincy, and I don't want to deprive them of that. But so maybe it's a matter of not eliminating it completely, but giving those Canadians the choice. A, I want a chaplain. B, I don't want a chaplain. Or, you know, I'm a Jew, I'm a Muslim, I'm a Sikh. Can this be more directly geared to my own faith, to my own culture?
We're almost out of time here, but Andrew, when we come back, we'll let you address that if you like. I think a lot of other institutions have gone that way, and quite effectively so. So perhaps the military can see their way to that as well. We're in the middle of the rundown with Dan Laxer from CJAD in Montreal and Andrew Pinson from CFRA in Ottawa. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards on News Talk Tonight. More to come after the break.
You're listening to News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hey, all. Richard Krause in for Jim Richards. Hopefully, he'll be back soon. In the meantime, I'm here for the next 3 hours or so. Joining me right now on the rundown is Dan Laxer, writer and co-host of the trivia show from 9 a.m. till noon on CJAD, and Andrew Pinsent, host of CFRA Live, 6 to 11 a.m. That's a long shift on the weekends. Andrew, when we left, we were talking about the directive to military chaplains, urging them to expunge God, religion, and from Remembrance Day and public ceremonies. Did you have a thought on that? I didn't give you a chance to speak.
Oh, all good. I think, I'm a big believer of secularism. I think there's a place for all religions in this aspect, or spirituality or things like that. So I do understand the directive in trying to make it a little bit more inclusive, and we absolutely have other faiths that serve in our military and deserve the respect of that. I do question, though, just, you know, the history of men that went to war is, you know, deeply rooted in Christianity and finding a lot of faith in God. So even as a secularist, I do see kind of some value in that historically, at least. So it's an interesting conversation.
As inflation pressures grow, the Bank of Canada execs take home millions of dollars in bonuses. So, Dan, tell me if this is about as tone deaf as you can get. Despite its governor warning business leaders not to factor soaring inflation into worker compensation, Canada's central bank handed out millions of dollars in bonuses to nearly all its top executives last year. Is that tone deaf, or is it just contractually? Maybe they were owed this money and they got what they deserved.
Well, I mean, it makes us feel better to call it tone deaf, but I mean, honestly, is this something that surprises us? We see politicians get raises that we don't think. I mean, you know, just a couple of years ago, the Quebec MNAs voted themselves raises. I mean, we see captains of industry walk away with bonuses. I mean, you know, the people at the top of the food chain, for lack of a better term, the rich get richer and the poor stay poor. That's how it always is. And the people who make the most money are going to get the raises when the rest of us aren't. I mean, I don't know what else to say about that. And I don't think anything we say about it is going to stop that.
I've been voting for to give myself a raise for a long time, and it has not worked.
I think you deserve it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We are our biggest advocates, but I think any government service, I don't even know, with an absorbent amount of, or a federally connected service with exorbitant amount of take home performance pay, I just kind of find that ridiculous. I think if you're already making a good salary, you're well compensated for the good job that you're doing. And beyond that, it feels like pigs at the trough, to be honest.
Oh, 100%. Yeah,
it does. And I think that's the thing. You know, I don't, admittedly, understand really how big business works, and I don't really know a lot of stuff, But I do understand showbiz, and I understand people's perceptions, and I understand, you know, public relations. And this seems to me, at least in making it public, seems to me to be a faux pas. After telling the average guy and gal, you can't get any more money, don't give any more money to people. I know there's a lot of inflation, but don't let that be reflected in wages. And then getting a big bonus pack yourself just doesn't sit very well with me.
Mm-hmm. Bootstraps, am I right?
Bootstraps.
pull yourself
your pants
up.
Down. Yeah, no, pull your pants up, Doug Ford. It's almost Halloween. We're just a few days away from Halloween, and we're wondering what you call a Halloween Scrooge. That's what I'm wondering. CBC went to a costume shop to ask Calgarians whether or not they think there's an age limit for Halloween. So, you know, if you're 5 or 6, that's okay. But if you're 15 or 16, is that okay? Should there be a cutoff age, Andrew, for going around house to house asking for candy on Halloween?
I was reading that New Brunswick actually put a bylaw back in on this, that it was like 18 and then they moved it down to 16. So I was kind of surprised, but I don't know. By that time, I remember as a teenager, by that time, you're too embarrassed, right? You're too cool to do it. So I don't feel like, you know, if a few kids wanted to do it of that age, I don't think it's hurting anybody.
I don't either. I think if you're willing, that's why I was calling the people that don't want to give out candy to people that come to their door, you know, Halloween Scrooges, because I think if you're willing to put on a costume, go door to door, whatever, grab a chocolate bar. What happens in Montreal, Dan?
Well, the only thing that bothers me, because I'm like, and I also don't want to stop anybody from having fun, no matter what the age. But when Andrew was saying about how when you become a teenager, you kind of become embarrassed about it,
right.
But they do it anyway. So they'll don a costume, they'll ring the doorbell, but they're 16, 17. So they can't be bothered to say trick or treat. They just open the bag and expect you to throw candy in it. And then they don't even say thank you. They just kind of keep their head down and walk away. But it's fine if they want to. I mean, I don't really give away candy anymore, but if they want to trick or treat, who am I to tell them not to?
What, do you just give away advice now instead of candy?
I stand there and I read passages. I open the door and I read passages from Marcus Aurelius' Meditations at unsuspecting trick or treaters.
I'm surprised you don't have a lineup around the block. So, in keeping with the Halloween theme, striking actors are restricted from wearing certain Halloween costumes. So, as we all know, the SAG-AFTRA strike is nearing 100 days now. It's a very long strike for a lot of people. With Halloween around the corner, the SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, has said, you know what? Dress in generic costumes, like you can be a ghost, you can be a zombie, but don't dress as a movie character, because we don't want to give any publicity to the studios or, you know, whoever it is, the producers that own these movie characters. I think this is just downright silly. I think that they should be, instead of worrying about what people wear when they're going out trick-or-treating, they should be at the table trying to negotiate an end to this strike. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong about this. Dan, what do you think?
Yeah, I like you. I think the whole Hollywood writer/actor strike does, at the end of the day, or if it goes on too long, becomes silly. For the same reason that I think, you know, people who work at the bank getting raises is silly. Not tellers, but I mean the guys at the top. Because at the end of the day, you know, the average actor doesn't make a hellhole of a lot of money. But Hollywood stars certainly do. So, I mean, if they wanna go out and wear the costumes they got to wear while filming movies, so what? I don't think anybody cares beyond the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah, I think it's essentially what they're saying is, you know, if you're going to go out, don't dress like Barbie. Don't dress like, you know, a character that could put someone in the mind of going to the movies and, you know, spending money that will then go to the producers who are right now their enemies. Andrew, you got 20 seconds.
Yeah, it just comes across as petty, right? And there's been so many more important things, like you mentioned, to agree with. But remember back in the summer, the studios cut down the trees for shade.
Yeah, that's right.
They were doing. There's been so many petty. There's been so much petty stuff. I'm just kind of over it.
Listen, if they keep this up, the Screen Actors Guild members won't be able to afford Halloween costumes next year. So get that settled. Dan Laxer, writer, co-host of the trivia show on CJAD at 9 to noon on the weekend. Andrew Pinson, host of CFRA Live, 6 to 11 a.m. on the weekend. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Richard Krause, in for Jim Richard. Stay with me. Lots more to come.